And now, Tintin. For millions of children, the intrepid boy reporter Tintin was a childhood hero, detailed in painstaking color by his Belgian creator Hergé. A new documentary by Danish director Anders Østergaard highlights some of the ambiguities of Tintin's creator. In fact, Hergé's life had little in common with Tintin's adventures, as Michael Farr, Tintin scholar, notes in the film.
Tintin traveled all over the world. I mean, there are few continents Tintin didn't go to. So Tintin traveled everywhere. Hergé traveled nowhere. He was an armchair traveler. And he knew about these countries because of the research. He did all the research, so he read like mad. He kept everything which might possibly be of interest, from newspapers, from magazines, from catalogues, from railway timetables, the most amazing variety of material. He would cut out, he would stick on a bit of cardboard, and he would file.
The film is called Tintin and I, and it airs on PBS's documentary program POV this evening. Director Anders Østergaard is joining us now from Jordan to talk about the film. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
What made you want to make a film about Hergé? Were you a fan of Tintin as a child?
I would almost say, of course I was a fan, because that goes for millions of European kids. That was part and parcel of my generation, you know, French comics, Asterix, Lucky Luke, and not least Tintin.
Yeah.
So I was a huge fan, yeah.
Yeah. The film makes extensive use of a 1971 interview with Hergé. How did that fall into your hands? Tell us a little bit about that interview.
How did it turn up?
Yes. And just a little bit about...
Well, actually, the funny thing is I already had the concept for this film, and I was just dying to make it before I knew about the tapes. I was just fascinated by Hergé's life stories as I had read about it. And when I was talking to the Hergé Foundation, they said, hey, do you know that we have these tapes in a safe? And they've been lying there for, you know, almost 30 years, just waiting to be discovered. And they were actually part, they were the material for a book that was published, but the fact was that it was censored heavily. So it was a whole new story that was on those tapes.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how that interview came about. And it lasted for like a week or something. They spend a lot of time together.
The strange thing is that it was quite spontaneous. We have this French student coming to Brussels to try and sort of doorstep all the great creators of comics. And he turns up at Hergé's office and sits down, and somehow the conversation goes on for 4 days. And I think what happened was that here Hergé met a person representing a whole new generation. You know, this was a 68 generation with long hair and hippie clothes and what have you. And he was fascinated by that generation. I think he felt that this was the right kind of person to tell his life story.
We are talking about a documentary that airs tonight on many PBS stations about the creator of the comic Tintin. If you would like to join the discussion, you may call 800-989-8255. I want to talk about how Tintin came about. I was interested to learn that this comic character, so popular, was created while Hergé was working for a very right-wing Catholic newspaper.
True, that's true. He was very, the Tintin character was very much the invention of his editor, an abbot, a clergyman called the Norbert Vallée. And he wanted a Catholic hero to inspire the kids to follow Catholic values, even right-wing Catholic values, because the first commission that Hergé got, he used to be in the ad department, he was promoted to the kids section. The first commission he got was to draw Tintin in the Soviet Union, which was a sheer piece of anti-communist agitation, you could say.
But let's talk a little bit about Hergé's relationship with politics, because when the Nazis occupied Belgium, Hergé worked for a Nazi-controlled newspaper.
Yeah.
And it seems as though he didn't quite understand that this was a problem from the film. I mean, the film seems to say that he was really a political naïf in some way. But
yeah, well, I don't think he was. I think... I think he was naive at the time, but I think, first of all, he must say that he was a bit of an escapist. if he could avoid taking responsibility in these questions, he would at that time. And that was sort of what persecuted him through his most of his adult life, that he was not really able to step into character, you could say. That came much later in his 50s, when suddenly he sort of had to face reality and wake up.
Yeah, because what was interesting about the way he dealt with this was that even, you know, after the war ended, like other former employees of the Nazi-controlled press, he was arrested, he was put in jail for one night and then blacklisted. Of course, as you said, this devastated him, but he still seemed to not really understand. He seemed to feel like he had been persecuted.
The thing was that he was told all the time that he was doing the right thing from back in 1929. He could imagine that since he was living up to all the Catholic values, that he could be on the wrong side somehow, and it came as a huge surprise, and it amazes me too, but that's how it was. He felt it was a gross injustice, and of course he was right in the sense that he was never, I mean, he was acquitted of all accusations in legal terms, although he was still blacklisted by the press unions. So he took a long time coming to terms with it.
Do you see all this reflected in the story of Tintin, in those stories and in the books?
Yeah, I do sense that he is not quite aware. It's his subconscious that's really at work here. It's not when he deals with strange things, surreal things, or when he deals with even with political issues. It's like he's not really aware of what it is. He would call himself a sponge later on, realizing he was a kind of guy who would soak up material and let it flow through him, so to speak. So he was almost not aware that he was putting all this content into this piece of children's entertainment, which was supposed to be quite innocent and turned out to be everything else. Yay.
Anders Østergaard is director of Tintin and I, which premieres tonight on PBS. And you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And let's go now to Michael. He is in North Carolina. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on this issue. And thank you, Anders, for the work that you've done in this regard. I discovered Tintin in the 70s and was fascinated by the excellence of Hergé's art and as well as his humor, Thompson and Thompson, for instance. And this is an interesting section to follow on what was given just a little bit before about grups and adult juveniles. I sometimes feel like I'm in that category as I have enjoyed reading Tintin to my children who have grown up loving it as well. So I look forward to seeing this tonight on PBS, and thank you again for the work you've done in this regard.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
Thank you much.
Very interesting, Anders, to hear that call because, these comics were created back in the 1930s. Here's a guy who read them as a child, and now he's reading them to his children. What do you think accounts for the longevity of the popularity of Tintin?
Well, the stories are strong. I mean, the artistic level is high. He has a wonderful blend of the real and the surreal and of adventure and suspense and humor all mixed into one. When you make things at that level, they won't die out. But that's another funny thing about it. You do get a sort of timeless feel sometimes with Tintin, and the paradox is that he's quite accurate about cars and trains and all those things which are very related to a specific time, but somehow, and I know it's a strange paradox, but somehow, but being so accurate, he almost also becomes timeless. Funny thing.
Interesting. Let's go to Giovanni, and Giovanni is in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Giovanni.
Hello. Yeah, I'm a big Tintin fan. I've been reading it since I was in second grade, I think.
Bravo.
And speaking to the timelessness point you just made, I noticed in books like Land of the Black Gold or Tintin and the Pecoros, the themes you talk about are really prevalent today as far as, like leftist guerrillas and Tintin and the Pecoros. And, a struggle for oil and sabotage in Land of the Black Gold. And, yeah, I just wanted to share that, and I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks very much. You know, I'm not a big reader of Tintin, so you're going to have to respond to that for me, Anders, because I'm not that familiar with the storylines, actually.
No, of course. I recognize what the listener is saying, that somehow you get this idea, somehow you get the strange feeling of premonition that he would foresee or be able to see through the times. I mean, he foresaw the moon landing already in 1950. He was making his own fantasy about traveling to the moon and was really quite accurate about a lot of details. Time and again, you have this sense of that he would have a strange kind of intuition for what was going to happen, not just what happened.
I had the sense from the film, maybe I'm wrong, but I had this, he got tired of the character after a certain point.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This, you know, this is connected to seeing himself breaking down as a moralist, realizing that he's not morally perfect, as he certainly did after the war. Of course, he had a crisis in his relationship with this perfect Boy Scout hero he was drawing every day. He knew that something was not quite quite how it should be. So what you see in the series, obviously, and he sees that himself, is that he identifies more and more with Captain Haddock, which is Tintin's close friend, and who is a very human and vulnerable and temperamental guy.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. It was fun talking
with you.
Okay,
my pleasure.
Anders Østergaard is the director of the documentary Tintin and I, which airs tonight on PBS, and he joined us by phone while traveling in Jordan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.